welcome to Charity Chat. I'm your host, Samuel Davies. In this episode, we speak with friend of the show, Giles Pegram, CBE, about fundraising, how it may or may not be changing, and some fundraising first principles that we can all benefit from keeping in mind. Giles Pegram is a seasoned fundraiser with heaps of expertise, and it was great to catch up with him again. So without further ado, here he is, Giles Pegram, CBE, speaking to us about fundraising first principles. I'm delighted to be joined again by friend of the show, Giles Pegram, fundraising expert and consultant. Giles, welcome back to Charity Chat.
Sam, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's always a great pleasure.
It's fantastic to have you back on the show. I know regular listeners will remember you from a number of our earlier episodes, including episode 79, 84 and 115, where we spoke about a range of things from the donor experience, relationship building in response to COVID and Project X, all of which were some of my favourite episodes. Maybe if we can start by just asking you, what trends have you seen in fundraising since we last spoke at the beginning of the pandemic?
What I'm noticing more and more is people are saying fundraising is becoming more difficult. Donors are becoming less generous. Donors don't want to give in the way that they did. And I'm getting a kind of message that somehow fundraising is changing. And it may be that fundraising is getting more difficult. It may be that fewer people are giving. But I think that may be because we are fundraising less well than we did. I'm not sure that it might be the donors that are at fault. I think it might be the way that we're approaching the donors that are at fault. Just to give you an example, I hear people saying a lot, we should be looking at younger people. And so I've seen some research recently done amongst 18 to 50 year olds. And that research showed that they didn't like giving in conventional ways, and we needed to think about different ways of approaching younger people. And there was a part of me that thought, well, if you're between 18 and 50, you know, you're fairly low down Maslow's hierarchy of need. You're thinking about your home, getting your first home when you're about 32. You're thinking about the cost of living crisis, et cetera, et cetera. You're probably not thinking about philanthropy when you're in your 20s and 30s. And so you get the impression that this gives the impression that people aren't wanting to give. But Sam, let me just ask you, at what age do you think people start their philanthropic life? Because we always talk about people starting slightly later in life.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I
guess... We haven't rehearsed this.
No, I guess for me, I think I had my first kind of direct debits and you know, really relatively small gifts going out every month to a few charities since I was probably maybe in my early 20s, late teen years, I think. But I probably responded to other things prior to that, you know, kind of big issue and things like this.
I think that from the data I've seen, people really start giving when they're over 50. It's when you know, they've sorted out the children have left home, they've got some spare cash around, they can think about where to put it. So now I'm going to ask you, if you're a woman aged 50, a healthy woman aged 50, what would your life expectancy be?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. Somewhere in the 80s?
Have a guess.
Somewhere 85?
95.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So in other words, if you look at a woman, a healthy woman of 50 years, she now has nearly half her life ahead of her. And so I would say that the donors of tomorrow that we should be thinking about are not the people in their 18 to 50s. Of course, we should be thinking about them and thinking about their thoughts and attitudes. But I think we should be spending more time looking at people in their 50s who've got half their life ahead of them and thinking about how we get through to them. And because we're neglecting them in favour of, we must go for younger people, I think we're missing a trick.
Over the last couple of years during the pandemic, there have been various studies and surveys that have talked about big drops in numbers of donors. But is it what you're saying is that there are other opportunities out there that charities should be thinking about, which is maybe building deeper relationships with their older supporters or other groups of older supporters too, that they have more capacity to give potentially.
Definitely that. I do think that there's been a sense that we've moved because of the perception that fundraising is getting more difficult, because of the perception that fewer people are giving. I think we're assuming that as inevitable and then looking for other ways like events and other ways in which people can engage with us. And I think we may have got that wrong and that we should be looking at giving, looking at who's giving, who are the people who are likely to give, and try and get the number of donors back up, not simply accept as inevitable that donor numbers are going down. And I think if we started it there, if we started with thinking, people had always given, people gave 2,000 years ago at the time of the Bible. I did a lot of work on the rebuilding of Troyes Cathedral in the 14th century. It was exactly the same there. When I was fundraising in the 1960s, it was exactly the same. I simply don't believe that in 2024, suddenly over the last 5 or 6 years, people's attitude to philanthropy has changed. I don't think it has, personally. I think it may be that we've thought it has and have taken that as our starting point, rather than saying philanthropy hasn't changed. Let's think, how do we approach donors? Who do we approach? How do we approach them, etc. Let me give you an example. So when I first started fundraising, it was in 1963, and I got a letter, I've got it in front of me, from the Oxford Committee for Famine Relief. And the telephone number at the top of the letter is telephone Oxford 59333. So this was before the ages of STDs, but you couldn't dial Oxfam. And it was a lovely letter. It was a personalised letter. And it used a very old-fashioned form of mail merge. But it was communicating with me as a person. And I felt communicated with me as a person. Now, I've done some mystery shopping recently amongst charities by giving online donations. And the responses that I've been getting back have been absolutely atrocious, almost across the board.
Oh, no.
I've not been treated as an individual. Oh, yeah. I'll make a donation. And the first response I'll get, after the thank you that comes up automatically on screen the moment you donate, the next message I get is, thank you for your continued support. Well, hang on, I haven't given you continued support. I've only given you once. You haven't told me what you've done with my money. You haven't made me feel good that I'm a donor. You've simply said, thanks for your continued support. And the reason I mentioned the letter of 1963 is that that's 50 years ago. No, 60 years ago. And it would seem to me that in the last 60 years, technology should have moved on to the extent we were now better able to be more personal with donors, to be more in tune with them, to treat them more as segments of one. And actually, technology seems to have taken us the other direction. We seem to be less personal, less individual, more treating people as kind of blocks of numbers on a spreadsheet. And I don't know why. I don't know whether it's because of trying to save money, we've used technology to save money, or because we haven't thought about how technology can help us to be more personal, to treat donors as individuals better.
Charles, I know you've been in fundraising for many years. What would you say are your top fundamental principles for fundraisers to keep in mind as they grapple with challenges that charities, individuals are struggling with at the moment?
For me, the biggest and most significant is about how we see fundraising. And I have a sense that a lot of people still see fundraising as about persuading people to give to the charity. And I think the way we persuade them, gentle persuasion, nudging them, not forcing them to do things that they don't want, but gently persuading them to give to the charity, because the charity is the person that's asking for the money. And I think there's a different way of looking at the world, which is that fundraising is about inspiring people to want to make a difference to the world by giving to the cause and having a great experience doing so. And just to explore the differences, the first is about persuasion. The second is about inspiration. And I think that if we think about our communications with donors as persuading them, that takes us down a certain mindset. If we think about it as inspiring them, that takes us down a different mindset. Then you've got whether they give to the organization. And I'm saying no, that they should be inspired to give to the cause. And it's about connecting the donor with the cause, not with the organization. And I think that if you look at those two things, if you look about fundraising, inspiring people to want to make a difference to the world by giving to the cause and having a great experience, it takes you down a road which Harold Sumption, one of my gurus from 50 years ago, taught me, which is that fundraising isn't about money. That's what he said. Fundraising isn't about money. It's about important work that needs doing. If you start by asking for money, you won't get it and you won't deserve it. And I think that's spot on. If you start by thinking about it's about money, communicating the need for money, that takes you in one direction. If you start by saying, here is a need, here is a way that you can be part of meeting that need, would you like to be? Would it give you a good experience to be part of meeting that need? And if we look at it that way, that we're not persuading them, we're inspiring them, we're actually presenting the work to them in such a way that asking for money is the last thing that we do after communicating the appropriate information and inspiration. Because by then the pressure should be off, the outcome, a foregone conclusion, decided by the donor. So I'm almost going as far as to say, don't ask the donor to give, show them the need, show them the possibility that they can have of being part of meeting that need, and then hand over to them. Let the donor make the decision. Let the donor say, yes, I want to be part of meeting that need. Not, yes, okay, I'll be persuaded to be part of meeting that need. What I'm saying, I suppose, is that if instead of thinking about asking for money, we think about giving people the opportunity to give to help meet a need, and with the knowledge, because we know that people experience the joy of giving, we know that people like to give, we know that people need to give. If we can create an environment in which people choose to give to help meet that need and actually feel good at the end of it, you've got a win-win. You've got the money to help meet the need, and the donor has felt really good about giving it. But at no point have you done a kind of a begging, you know, please give £30, please give £30. This is what I don't like about fundraising or the way it's developed.
Shopping lists like the £30 could, you know, buy a goat, or, you know, £50 could, you know, these types of things. We see those as kind of a regular feature, I think, in a lot of charity direct mail and also in you know, other charity marketing. Where do you stand on things like that? Do you feel that there's a place for that, and that what we're talking about is also a kind of an additional thing that fundraisers need to think about? Or do you think that the idea of presenting the cause needs to come first, and then actually putting figures into some of these marketing materials is problematic?
I think the idea that saying that, you know, £10 will, or £30 will provide a village with a goat that will provide them with milk, blah, 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 blah. Would you like to provide a village with a goat for £30? That, I think, is good. But to say, this village needs a goat, please give £30. Please give £30. This village needs a goat, please give £30. That's what I'm saying is wrong. So it's not the idea of linking numbers with what can be achieved. I think that's good. If you say, you know, £30 can do this, £60 can do that, you know, would you like to be a part of this? What would you like to give? It's trying to definitely tell the donors what their money can do, but put the decision to make the gift, the decision to pay for that goat in the hands of the donor. I think we need to be sure that when we're talking about the possibilities that a donor's money can do, we should be doing that in a way that engages the donor. So if a donor gives £30, for example, to pay for a goat in a village and has a great experience doing so, and if they get thanked and appreciated, and if they get feedback of, you know, your goat went to this village and this is the difference they've made, you'll make the donor feel warm about the fact they've given that £30. And in my Giles's view, you'll make them predisposed to want to give another £30 because they had a good experience the last time they gave £30. Why would they not want to have the same experience again?
So this
difference, if you persuade people, the chances are they're going to give, you know, it could be they give for the problem to go away. If you inspire people and they give because they're inspired, they remain inspired afterwards and are predisposed to give again. So, you know, it's back to being a win-win. You have to start with inspiring donors, not persuading them. We've just been talking about fundraising with individuals. And of course, a lot of your listeners are going to be people who deal with companies and trusts and organizations. And another one of my absolutely key principles for the new fundraiser was that people don't give to entities. People give to people, not to organizations. And I think that when you think about the trust, you should think about the trustees and the administrator. When you think about the company, you should think about the decision maker in that company. People don't give to entities, they give to people. And I think that there's a sense in which the external world is chaotic, and we try and organize ourselves into trusts, companies, major donors, individual givers, etc. But the real world doesn't think like that. And we need to make sure that our internal structures don't get in the way of us relating to people. And there's another example of that, which is just take the Bamfords in Stoke. Now, Carol Bamford was chairman of our Stoke branch, which had 100 little local committees of ladies doing different things. And she was the chair of that branch. And then for the full stop appeal, she got her husband, Sir Anthony Bamford, to get his company involved in adopting the NSPCC. He wanted to get his staff involved in individual giving. And so the individual giving team got involved. And then, of course, the major donor team thought about, well, the Bamfords themselves are potential major donors. And you had four groups of people, the local fund, community fundraiser, the corporate fundraiser, the major donor fundraiser, the individual giving fundraiser, all thinking about the Bamfords. And they were thinking about them from their own silo. And one of the things that I feel is really important for fundraisers is to try and break down those silos. And if you're thinking about the Bamfords, try and think about the Bamfords holistically, not as a combination of major donor, company, branch chair, etc. That they're people. And the more we can break down the silos and treat people as people, the better. But there's another one, Sam, and that is the whole way in which we present the need. And there's been a lot of controversy about this. And some charities have gone way over the top in presenting the need in a harsher and harsher way that simply turns people off. And then other people say, oh, we've been told that by our trustees, why don't you present the positive part of our work, not just the negative? And I think there is something about, it's another one of my quotes from my guru, Harold Sumption, present the need powerfully, not to shock, but to engage. And I think that's something a lot of charities get wrong. They either present the need too powerfully and just turn people off, or they don't talk about the need and therefore don't engage people with the need. And my simplistic view, one of my top tips would be present the need powerfully to engage people, not to shock them. There's probably a final one, Sam, and it could be yet another quote from my guru, Harold Sumption, and that is, those who give, give, those who don't, don't. And I think there are an awful lot of fundraisers who think that everybody is a potential donor. And yet we know from research that less than half of people give to charity at all, ever. And I think we need to stop trying to persuade people who don't give to become givers and focus on the people who do give. So in other words, if you had to choose between approaching somebody who has 10 charities that they give to already or none, the person I'd go to would be the person who has 10 charities that they give to already. Because if they're not already given to charity, they're not charity supporters. So we should focus on the people who are going to give, not on people who just don't give.
Giles Pegram, CBE, thank you for joining us again for Charity Chats.
It's a great pleasure, and I hope that's been helpful. I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you there to Giles Pegram, CBE, for once again sharing his insights and expertise with us here on Charity Chat. Is fundraising changing? Rather than helping us to build deeper relationships with supporters, is technology inadvertently taking us further away from personalising our approach? From my experience, the complexity of systems and processes can sometimes distract us from building genuine relationships with supporters. Working on mass communications with many different donor groups, for example, can pose a challenge to demonstrating an understanding of specific donors' needs. Perhaps, though, now is the time for system change, especially considering recent evidence of donor decline among certain populations. Is it the technology or the users of it, i.e. us, that needs to change how we work? How we understand fundraising and the energy that we bring to it can have a profound difference on our experience and that of the supporters we're in contact with. Rather than persuading people to give to charity, we should aim to inspire people to change the world by giving to the cause. Perhaps presenting fundraising as, in the words of Howard Sumption, not being about money but being about important work that needs doing, we can encourage donors to give and make them feel good in the process. So thank you, dear listener, for getting this far with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to enjoy the podcast. We'd love to hear either way. Please do like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode, plus share with any colleagues or friends who may be interested. It's just left for me to thank our corporate sponsors. These are Giant Squid Audio Lab for sponsoring our podcast kit, Magda Axmit for our beautiful website. Check it out at charitychat.org.uk. And of course, Forest of Fools for playing us throughout the show and for playing us out right now. That's it from me. Keep on doing what you can. Speak to you soon. Cheerio. Bye-bye.